I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
And welcome to Bird Calls, everybody. Thank you for being with us. As always, we're here every Sunday on 1490 WGCH, so welcome aboard. And there's a happy birthday in order. Happy birthday to Bird Calls Radio. It was March 19th of 2011 that we had our first show. It was a different station, which was had since been bought out, so now we found a new home here in Greenwich, so we're happy to be here, and we're happy to have you joining us from wherever you are. So happy birthday to us, I guess. It was a little more than a year ago now, because it was March 19th, which was the actual show, but Mylon Bull from Connecticut Audubon was our first guest, and he came on and talked about the 2011 State of the Birds report, and that was real interesting about some of the dangers facing birds and the habitat loss and, you know, the changing landscape of Connecticut. So that was an interesting first show we had. And Mylon was on a couple weeks ago as well to talk about the 2012 State of the Birds. And, of course, that was about, you know, where the next generation of conservationists are coming from. So Mylon's a two-time guest, and he was the first one. So that was happy to have him. Lots of memories in the first year of Bird Calls Radio. It's been fun. Had lots of great guests. I'm not going to start naming them because I'm going to miss one or two that I really enjoyed, but let's just say I enjoyed all of them. We have local guests and state guests and national guests and big-time birders and some birders who, birders and conservationists who just, may not have the big names but have lots of information to share and, you know, are happy they were happy and appreciative that they were able to come on the Bird Calls and talk to us for a little bit. All those archives are on birdcallsradio.com, so check those out if you missed any shows. We've had a lot of great shows this past year, so check it out on birdcallsradio.com. There's a radio archives button there, and check that and scan through and see if a guest of interest pops up and take a listen, or listen to them all. What the heck? And I'm sure you have a couple free hours on your hand, so check out all those great guests that we've had this past year. Also, of course, like to thank the sponsors that we've had the past year, especially Wild Birds Unlimited. They've been with us from the beginning. Joe and Pat Warren have stores in Darien, Connecticut, and also Bedford Hills, New York. Very much appreciate their support of Bird Calls Radio. Joe is usually on the show, giving us some of his knowledge of backyard bird watching. So I always like to have Joe on. And, he's the thing I like about Joe is he comes on the show and doesn't pitch all his products necessarily and come on and just give a 5-minute advertisement for Wild Birds Unlimited. He'd rather share his knowledge about what's going on in the backyard and maybe give some tips. And, he believes in the mission of bird calls. So that's, he said before, that's why he's a big sponsor. So we certainly appreciate Joe and Pat Warren's sponsorship and support of Bird Calls Radio. So we look forward to another year and beyond of bird calls with more great guests and more bird banter and, you know, just more fun talking about wild birds and nature. If you have a suggestion for the show on how to make it even better for the second year and beyond, feel free to go to birdcallsradio.com and hit the contact me button. Say, hey, I want more of this or less of that. If there's something that I'm not giving you that you would like to hear, let me know. If there's something I'm giving you too much of and you don't want to hear it, well, let me know that too. It's a contact me button on birdcallsradio.com. So, and of course, for this birthday edition, we want to thank you, the listeners. Without anybody listening, there would be fairly pointless to do a show like this. So we appreciate you guys listening to birdcallsradio.com. So enough of the birthday stuff. Let's get on to what's being seen in the area. It's the end of March, And we're seeing a lot of birds that we normally don't see till mid-April or even beyond. So this warm winter is certainly impacting the migration period, the spring migration. It'll be interesting to see if that trend continues throughout the whole spring. Will some of the warblers show up even earlier than planned? Usually mid-May is about the peak. I wonder if early May or late April or will be the peak this year, or maybe they'll wait till the second week of May again. I guess we'll have to see. We're going to talk more about that a little later on with today's guest, who is Mary Warren. She is the naturalist at McGee Marsh in northwestern Ohio. She's a naturalist at McGee Marsh Wildlife Area, and it'll be interesting to talk to her. She's got an interesting story and lots of advice to give us, and I'm sure we'll talk about the warm winter and early migration there. But there's, if you're looking for migrants and what's out there, if you're not seeing any, or if you're wondering what's going on in the other part of your state or other states, check out the rare bird alert list. I'm sure if you Google rare birds in Connecticut or rare birds in Rhode Island, wherever you happen to be listening, just do a quick Google search and I'm sure you'll find it. Connecticut is mostly done through the Connecticut Ornithological Association, the COA. They do a good job of compiling everything. Roy Harvey does a good job putting everything together. And a discussion came up this week on the Connecticut rare bird list on eastern kingbirds, because they're being seen already and they're 2 to 3 weeks ahead of time. So birders who are much better than I am are checking into whether this is the earliest ever that eastern kingbirds have been recorded in Connecticut. So they're on that. I'll be sure and let you know. Another bird that has been showing up, maybe a little bit early, is the eastern phoebe. I know I saw one in my backyard the other day, and its wagging or bobbing tail gives it away. You can always tell when there's a phoebe in your backyard because it sits on a perch and wags its tail. It's actually quite funny and to look at, and it's a dead giveaway. It's an eastern phoebe. Otherwise, it doesn't look all that descriptive. It's kind of a blackish gray bird, not very big in size either. So, but when you see the tail wagging, you know it. And I like the eastern phoebe because it's true to its name, both the eastern part and the phoebe part. They're only on the eastern part of the United States, so hence the eastern part. And they're one of the many birds that say their name. They're named after their name, kind of like the chickadee is named after its call or its song, and the whippoorwill is named after its song, and lots of other birds, but the eastern phoebe is no exception. So it's eastern because it lives in eastern United States, and phoebe because it says phoebe. Let's give a listen. Let's see if I can get some audio called up here for what the eastern phoebe says. So listen for its name, phoebe. So there you have it, the eastern phoebe. I kind of talked over him a little bit. Sorry there, phoebe. So phoebe, repeated over and over, is the song of the eastern phoebe. And, of course, the probably the best way to recognize the phoebe is by its wagging and bobbing tail. A couple other birds do that. A lot of shorebirds do that. But if one is perched in your backyard and doing that, that's probably an eastern phoebe. And then you can always listen for its song to see if it's saying its name over and over. Interesting piece of information about the eastern phoebe that I got from the Audubon app, which they have some great apps, and their birding one is no exception. And according to this Audubon app, eastern phoebe is quite possibly the first type of bird that was ever banded. Apparently John James Audubon banded one way back when, so eastern phoebe is thought to be the first bird ever banded. And of course, banded is when you catch the bird and put bands on it to try to track to see where it goes. And Audubon wanted to see if this particular phoebe was going to come back to its same location the following spring, so he put a band on it. And that's, of course, common these days to ban things, ban birds. They catch them in nets and gently put bands on them and release them back and see if they can find them again. It's a good conservation tool for finding out where birds are going and if they return to the same winter and summer areas each year. What else is going on out there? I saw an egret today. Egret flew over. So egrets are back. This was a great egret, not a snowy egret, but we'll have both here in New England before too long. Seems a little early for the egrets to be coming back, but they're here. You know, a handful of them will stay over the winter, so I guess it's not that uncommon. But, you know, this appeared to be a migrant. I hadn't seen one in a while, so I'm assuming this one was a migrant coming back early. Lots of chatter about ospreys returning. Ospreys were almost wiped out from the East Coast and the whole United States, as a matter of fact, like a lot of birds of prey because of DDT and other pesticides, but they've made a strong comeback. And now where there used to be one or two or a small handful of osprey along the Connecticut coast, now there's dozens of them right here in Norwalk and Westport and, you know, up to Greenwich. And so there's, you know, probably 10 to 20 of them. I do a count with a couple buddies each year, and we're going to do that in a couple weeks to make sure they're all back. And we see at least 10 just off, you know, just off Norwalk and Westport. So if you expand that range up to Greenwich and maybe even down the Fairfield, Milford area, there's, you know, there's got to be probably a couple dozen of them at least. And if you expand that through the whole coast of Connecticut and New England, there's, you know, certainly a lot of osprey. When I vacationed down in Delaware, they're almost like gulls down there. There's so many of them. There's every platform has a osprey pair on it. So it's great to see. It's a good success story about the osprey coming back. So I'd love to talk about osprey. So I'm sure we will, be talking about osprey more in the coming weeks. So what else is going on out there? So what else are you seeing? Let me know. Drop me a line at birdcallsradio.com. A little later on in today's show, we're going to have Mary Warren from McGee Marsh Wildlife Area in northwestern Ohio. She's a naturalist. And McGee Marsh was named a top 10 birding spot in the country. So that's interesting. We'll have to ask Mary about that, find out why it's such a good birding spot. The results are in from the Great Backyard Bird Count. We had John Fitzpatrick on a couple weeks ago, right before the Great Backyard Bird Count took place. That's a program of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and also Audubon. And the results are in, and the number one bird found out there in terms of being on the most amount of checklists was the Northern Cardinal. So Northern Cardinal seems to be doing well and expanding. The number one bird in terms of sheer numbers of birds seen, which may be a surprise. You might think it would be a crow or a house sparrow or something common, more common like that, but it was actually the snow goose. The snow goose was the most prolific bird of the Great Backyard Bird Count, with more than 3 million of them being seen. So I guess there were a couple massive flocks in the east, and that really bumped up their numbers. So cardinal made the most checklists, and snow goose was the most prolific. Interesting. And when John Fitzpatrick was on here, he had a goal that he wanted 100,000 people to, or 100,000 checklists turned in. Some people can turn in multiple checklists, so it wasn't necessarily 100,000 people, but he wanted 100,000 checklists, and he got that. They went to 104,000 checklists were turned in, and I think that's probably because everyone listening to Bird Calls Radio went out and did the Great Backyard Bird Count. Otherwise, it probably wouldn't have reached the goal, but thankfully John was on Bird Calls Radio pitching the idea, so we did that. So now, anyway, it is good that they topped it because that means more people are interested in birding, and the more people who are interested in birding, the better chance that birds have of surviving all these evils that humans throw at them, like habitat destruction and pesticides and all that kind of stuff. So let's take a look back at 1961. Birds in Your Dooryard by Ruth Gortner Grierson. She used to write for the Hour newspaper back in the 60s. And of course, I write now for the Hour newspaper. I have a bird watching column for the birds that runs every Thursday in the Hour newspaper in Norwalk, Connecticut. But Ruth used to write for the Hour in the 60s. So 50 some years ago, what was going on? Let's see. She visited Todd's Point in Old Greenwich, which is where we are here in Greenwich. So not far from here, Todd's Point in Greenwich. She writes, on the pond, the point was a mass of ducks, which means obviously there were lots of ducks. There were hundreds resting and feeding. So that's one point I wanted to make. And the other one, she talks about when she's looking off the coast, she sees these birds. She writes, old squaws are interesting looking ducks. They combine white on the body with unpatterned wings. The male is boldly patterned with dark brown and white on the head, neck, belly, and scapulars. A little tough to read because I have to read it from the microfilm printout, which isn't the best. But anyway, she's talking about old squaw, and she's talking about what the sound they make. Old squaws are quite talkative through this time, though this time they were silent. The sound is very comical and indescribable. They can be seen anywhere along the sound. I remember well hearing the old squaw chorus off Calf Pasture Beach, which of course is in Norwalk. And there's still plenty of those ducks out there. They're a winter duck. They nest in the Arctic and come down here for the winter where it's warm, especially this winter. But the two things that I wanted to point out of how things may have changed over the years, she says, on the pond, at the point, was a mass of ducks. I haven't seen a mass of ducks in a long time. So hopefully, hopefully that doesn't mean not good things for the duck population. There's duck surveys every year, and, sometimes there's fewer, sometimes they're about the same, but it would certainly seems like there might be less if there was a mass of ducks. And I'm sure at some points, some locations there are, the ponds are thick with ducks, but hopefully that's not a thing of the past. I'd certainly like to see one someday. In New Hampshire, when I lived up there, I used to see huge flocks of common mergansers, so I guess there are big flocks left. It's just been a while since I've seen the big, massive flocks. And, of course, the other thing I wanted to point out is she refers to old squaws, which, of course, are not old squaws anymore. They've changed the name to long-tailed ducks. So funny how things change over the years. That was a relatively recent change, too. They were old squaw and, fairly recent memory. So, old squaws are now long-tailed ducks. So if you, and, it's so recent that a lot of people still refer to them as old squaw. So if you see or hear the term old squaw, they're referring to long-tailed ducks. So that's our looking back. If you have a memory of bird watching from 30, 50, 60 years ago, let me know. Go to birdcallsradio.com and send it in. Go to contact me and tell me your story of yesteryear. We have a book winner. Last week, Richard Crossley was on, and he had a signed book that he and Princeton Press donated to Bird Calls Radio, which was nice, and we decided to give it away to someone 18 and under. And in a random drawing, we chose, I'm not going to pronounce the last name too wrongly, but Charlotte Wozlik. She's from Vermilion, Alberta, Canada, so we got some listeners far and wide in Bird Calls Radio here. So from Vermilion, Alberta, in Canada. She was one of the many youngsters who sent in a request to win the book. And geez, especially with this, with only youngsters being able to win it, I wish I could give one to everyone who sent it in. So I guess all I could say is thank you to everyone who did send it in. And congratulations to Charlotte. I'll get that autographed book of the Crossley ID Guide out to you as soon as possible. This is time we usually bring in Joe Warren from Wild Birds Unlimited, who I mentioned before, but Joe is not around today. But I just wanted to express my thanks and appreciation to Joe and Pat Warren from Wild Birds Unlimited again for this, for all their support for this first year of Bird Calls Radio. They were there for, with me from the beginning, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate Joe's input to the show every week. He's got a good good style about him, and if you are in Darien or Bedford Hills, New York, certainly go in and check it out. He's got a, he'll even give you some free seed, a free 5-pound bag of seed. He'll give you that if you go in and say hi and mention the show. And I would suggest you do. It's fun just going in the store and being surrounded by bird items and seed and feeders and gifts and bird knickknacks and tools. It's just a great store to be in. So he's in the Roden Heights section of Darien and also in Bedford Hills. So go say hi to Joe. And we're going to take a quick break here. And we're going to bring in Mary Warren, who is a naturalist at McGee Marsh Wildlife Area in northwestern Ohio. So we'll be right back after a few short messages on Bird Calls here on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the wild. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no-waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut.
Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting, permissions, photo editing and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's K-Y-M-R-Y Group.com or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Hi, this is Chris Bozak inviting you to check out birdcallsradio.com. It's the official internet home of the Bird Calls Radio program, heard right here on 1490 WGCH from 1 to 2 p.m. every Sunday. Bird Calls is your weekly look at the wonderful world of wild birds with regular features and expert guests. Birdcallsradio.com supports the show with bird blog postings, show archives, a contact me button where you can send in questions for the show, and a special page for potential advertisers to learn how to support Bird Calls Radio. So check out birdcallsradio.com and feel free to drop me a line.
Now back to Bird Calls with my dad, Chris Bozak.
Well, I like birds.
And welcome back to Bird Calls, everybody. This is Chris Bozak, your host. Remember, if you miss any shows, check out birdcallsradio.com. We have a whole year's worth of good archives now. And building on a strong second year, we bring on Mary Warren. She is a naturalist at McGee Marsh Wildlife Area in northwestern Ohio. So welcome to Bird Calls, Mary.
Thank you, Chris. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. I love having a natural song because I can throw out questions about birds, reptiles, weather, whatever. So it's always fun to have a naturalist on.
Okay.
And speaking of weather, Mary, I'm sure you haven't been asked this yet this year, but I'm sure you've had a warm winter in Ohio like we have here in New England. And how is that going to impact the birds at all, especially with the spring migration? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny you should ask that because that's the number one question this week. I've probably had at least a dozen calls, and right before you called, a gentleman from Georgia called me and wondered
okay.
the same thing.
Okay.
Normally, the migration's more timed to the length of day than weather, and I was out this morning and did our monthly bird count, and didn't see anything unusual, but did see a killdeer on eggs already, which is a little early, and chickadees excavating a nesting hole, and Some great egrets were here. It's a little early for them, but most of the warblers, the littler birds, are still down in the tropics, so I don't think it's going to affect the overall timing of the migration too much. Probably what it will affect maybe is their food supply, because I don't know in your neck of the woods, but up here things are just popping out and the leaves are coming out on the trees and mm-hmm. the flowers and the insects are hatching, and of course these birds, you know, eat insects, so not sure how that's all going to play out.
Okay, so that, yeah, we're having the same thing. The leaves are budding out. A couple of trees are in full bloom already, which is odd to see in March. But yeah, the length of day obviously is, you know, as you said, the major consideration. But yeah, you mentioned the insects. A lot of Townsend Dickinson was on, and his wife Marty says hello, by the way.
Oh yeah, hi Marty.
And Townie was on last year talking about migration and how, you know, some of the birds follow the insect hatch. So do you think that was, is that a concern at all, that some of the warblers who are dependent on a specific path in the insects, or are they going to get messed up, or do you think they'll be okay?
They may be. Maybe they'll eat a different kind of insect.
Yeah.
We have no shortage of insects here at McGee Marsh, let me tell you that. But, yeah, certainly certain caterpillars, especially, you know, depending what their host tree or plant is, will, you know, might be hatching out earlier than normal. So I don't think this is going to, you know, be a real bad effect or anything on the birds. I think there'll be plenty of food. It might be just different kind of insect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you see going forward as a consequence or as a result of the warm winter? We talked about the insects. Some of them, they're out already. And ticks, of course, are a big concern in New England, as they are, I'm sure, where you are as well. Do you think it'll be a worse year for ticks and some insects this year?
Very possibly, because we had a really, really wet winter, too, especially for mosquitoes and things that like to be wet. We didn't have a lot of snow, but we had a lot of rain. And now with the warmer temperatures, yeah, I, like I said, was out this morning, and there are a lot of different bugs flying around already. And,
okay.
You know, March 22nd. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll get into your involvement with getting kids outside a little later, but I just want to, since I mentioned ticks, I want to, you know, if you're out there looking for birds, be careful, but don't let the fear keep you inside if you are looking for birds and things. Get out there and enjoy it, and just check yourselves carefully when you get back. Do you have any other tips on how to, you know, deal with the insects or ticks this year for people who might be cautious?
Yeah, that's good advice to, you know, be aware that there are insects out. Some people use sprays. Some people don't like to do that. But, yeah, tuck your socks in and, you know, try to stay out of the tall grasses. That's what the ticks seem to love to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of check yourself, like you said, when you're done. But don't let that stop you from getting outside and enjoying the birds and nature.
Okay. All right. Your McGee Marsh wildlife area is a little distant from New England. So tell us about the wildlife area and, you know, maybe some of the awards that it's won.
Sure. Probably not many of your listeners have even heard of me, but they may have heard of or even been to McGee Marsh here where I work. It's a state wildlife area, and we have about 2,000 acres here. It's on Lake Erie. But the big attraction is our boardwalk. It's only about 20 acres, and that's where all the warblers show up in the springtime. And people come from all over to watch these warblers. Last May, we had over 50,000 people here, just to give you
oh,
an
wow.
idea.
Yeah.
And McGee Marsh has been named one of the top 10 birdwatching spots in the country, so... right next door to us also is Ottawa National Wildlife Refuge, and they have over 3,000 acres there. So between McGee and Ottawa, there's a big complex here and great habitat for birds, and and the birders have discovered us.
Okay, that's good. Now you mentioned the great habitat. Why? What else makes Miggy and the nearby areas great for bird watching?
Well, for warblers, especially in the spring that are migrating north, they see Lake Erie out there and they're like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, we're tired, we're hungry, so it's kind of like a giant rest stop for them before they continue their migration. A few of the warblers do nest here, but most of them are going farther north. So it's just, you know, right before they cross the lake, there's just like a beach ridge and a small woodlot along the boardwalk, and that's where they can really pile up on a good day.
Okay. Now, I should probably know better than to ask a naturalist this question, but do you have any favorite birds in particular that pass through there?
Oh, I get asked that question all the time, and I think I've narrowed it down to three species of warblers anyway. The Blackburnian warbler is one of my favorite, and the black-throated blue is just a striking bird, and then the Prothonotary, that's one actually that does nest here, the Prothonotary, and that's just a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant bird if you've ever seen one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, they are a brilliant bird to see, just like you said. So tell us about, you had mentioned that the birders have found you, which is a good thing. Now, are the birders spending money there? I understand you were either part of a study or you know of a study that happened in Ohio about the economics of birding.
The birders are spending money, you know, when you get that many people in the area. Many of them are staying, you know, for weeks. But, yeah, they definitely do spend money. And there was just a study that was recently released on the economic impacts of bird watching along Lake Erie. And this was done by a professor at Bowling Green State University. And McGee Marsh was one of the six Ohio natural areas that he did his survey in. And his results found that over $26 million were generated by bird watchers in 2011 just from these six areas that surveyed. So that's a good chunk of change. And over half of that $26 million was spent from birders coming to McGee Marsh.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. Now, do you guys have any festivals in May that kind of celebrate the wildlife?
Sure. We have had for many years the International Migratory Bird Day, which is always celebrated on the second Saturday of May. And we have a lot of special events going on that day. And it's right at the peak of the migration. Usually the first 2 weeks of May are the peak time for the neotropical migrants that are coming through. And then this is the third year, I believe, for the biggest week in American birding, which is so big it's longer than a week. It's like 10 days, May 4th starting this year. So that has definitely brought a lot of new people into the area from all over the country that may have never been here before. But once people find us, they tend to come back.
Okay, that's good, doing you. When they come back, yeah, so many good good bird watching spots, and I'm sure that is a good one. Now, as a naturalist, obviously you know more about different types of wildlife, and every once in a while here on Bird Calls Radio, I like to veer away from birds a little bit. So, what else do you see up there? And maybe do you think maybe the warm winter might impact some of the other wildlife this spring?
Yeah, this is a wildlife area, and I work for a division of wildlife, so yeah, we have a lot of different wildlife. We're also a research center here, so we kind of focus on wetland wildlife, like bald eagles and trumpeter swans, which are pretty common in the area. But as far as other things besides birds, there's a lot of different mammals that are here. We have, of course, a lot of muskrat. We've had beaver that have just moved into the marsh in the last, 5 or 6 years. I always told people, they told me they saw a beaver, and I said, oh, that's just a muskrat. Well, okay. I can't say that anymore because we definitely do have beavers. I think the manager told me we have 8 beaver lodges now inside the marsh. So.
All right. Now, do you see that as a good thing or something to watch?
Something to watch for sure. I know that trappers have been allowed to come in and trap some of them because they can really destroy the dikes and change the whole habitat in a hurry. So, you know, it's good to have some of them around, but not too many.
Okay. Yeah, what would you suggest to a private homeowner? And I ask this because my brother has a camp down in the central part of Pennsylvania, and there's a creek that runs through it, and he's owned it for, I don't know, 20 years or so. And just this past year, he's noticed that a couple trees have been taken down by beavers, and he's getting all sorts of advice on what to do. So what would you suggest? I mean, are they going to try to create a pond there? Are they going to try to block it? Or are they just taking some trees down? Or what's your advice?
Yeah, well, like I said, they'll definitely change the landscape and the habitat and maybe divert water to where you don't want it to go. But you know, it's nice to have a few of them around. They aren't really a neat creature. But, you know, if you get too many around, that's not a good thing. And there are, you know, nuisance wild animal trappers that will come in and trap them for sure if, you know, that's what you want to do. But it's just kind of a striking a happy medium and a balance, I guess, between enough and too much.
Okay. All right. What are some of the reptiles and amphibians? And do you think the wet, warm winter will have an impact on them?
Yeah, well, the warm weather certainly has brought the turtles out earlier. I've noticed a lot of turtles out on the road. We have snapping turtles here. About the only time you see them out is when they're going to lay their eggs. So I've seen a couple of them out already, and some painted turtles. And then we have a turtle that's pretty unique to the Lake Erie marshes, and it's called the Blandings turtle.
Okay.
Not sure if you guys have those up in your neck of the woods or not, but seen some of those out too. So the turtles definitely seem to be out earlier. Haven't seen too many snakes out yet. The frogs have been singing for weeks now, so they're pretty active.
Okay. Now, and I'm sure the animals have been around far longer than we have, and I'm sure they know what they're doing. But what say a cold snap does come around? What happens to the reptiles and amphibians then?
Yeah, it is only March 22nd, so we're probably going to have some more cold weather here yet, and they'll probably just burrow back down into the mud, the turtles and things. So if it's not nice and sunny, they won't be out and won't be too active. So they'll probably, just like we'll be going back into our houses if we get more snow.
Okay.
They'll probably just burrow down into the mud or,
Okay.
Not be too active for a while.
Yeah, and of course the birds know what to do as well if a cold weather happens.
Yeah. The birds, they just kind of hunker down and ride out the storm, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We're going to take a short break. We have a lot more to get to, including an interesting story about how you became a naturalist. And, of course, on bird calls, I like to talk about getting kids outside. So that's another one of your specialties. So we have lots more to talk about, but we got to take a quick break. And we'll be back with more bird calls with Mary Warren, a naturalist for McGee Marsh Wildlife Area, after a few short messages here on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the wild. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut. Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting,
permissions, photo editing and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's K-Y-M-R-Y Group.com or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Hi, this is Chris Bozak inviting you to check out birdcallsradio.com. It's the official internet home of the Bird Calls Radio program, heard right here on 1490 WGCH from 1 to 2 p.m. every Sunday. Bird Calls is your weekly look at the wonderful world of wild birds with regular features and expert guests. Birdcallsradio.com supports the show with bird blog postings, show archives, a Contact Me button where you can send in questions for the show, and a special page for potential advertisers to learn how to support Bird Calls Radio. So check out birdcallsradio.com and feel free to drop me a line.
Now back to Bird Calls with my dad, Chris Bozak.
Well, I like birds.
And welcome back to Bird Calls, everybody. This is Chris Bozak, your host. We're here with Mary Warren. She is the naturalist at McGee Marsh Wildlife Area in northwestern Ohio. And remember, this is the birthday edition of Bird Calls Radio. We're starting our second year now, but we have lots of great archives from other guests on birdcallsradio.com. Check that out. And if you have any suggestions for the show going forward, feel free to contact me through that website as well, birdcallsradio.com. But let's get back to Mary Warren, the naturalist at McGee Marsh Wildlife Area. Welcome back to the show, Mary.
Thank you.
Now, you have an interesting story about how you became a naturalist. Why don't you share that?
Well, yes. I guess I got my influence and love of nature when I was young. I was in Campfire Boys and Girls as a youth, you know, it's like a scout youth organization, and my kids were in Campfire. I was a Campfire leader, and I actually worked for Campfire for quite a while as a field director, and I always thought, well, that would really be cool to have a job where you could, you know, teach people about nature, and I kept saying that for a while, and my husband got tired of hearing me say it. He said, well, why don't you go do something about it? So I did. I went back to school, and I loved every minute of it. I went to Hocking College in Southeast Ohio, and when I graduated from college, my youngest of three kids graduated from high school. So,
okay.
Just to give you a little perspective there, and I couldn't have done it without the family support, but it's a wonderful thing. So I always encourage everybody, and you know, that's thinking about going back to school or doing something they really want to do, to, you know, follow your dreams. It's never too late. So
okay, well, that's great advice for everybody, no matter how old you are, but especially if you see maybe some years in your rearview mirror. It's as Mary says, it's never too late, and so follow your dreams there. So what did you study in school there?
I studied a lot of ologies, ornithology, geology, biology, archaeology. As a naturalist, you learn a little bit about a lot of different things. So it's a very hands-on school. I think we were out in the field more than in the classroom, which I thought was really cool. So
yeah.
I was just soaking it all up and really, really enjoyed it. And like I said, I would just encourage anybody that's thinking about it that, you know, it is possible. I have people come in the bird center here where I work now, and they say, oh, this looks like a great place to work. And, you know, I always wanted to do that and get into the natural resources when I was younger, but I never did. So I tell them my story and say, you know, try to encourage them that, you know, it's never too late to do what you really love doing.
Okay. And I like that you do a spring beginning bird ID class. Is that right?
Yes, we do. You know, since we're in such a birdy area here in McGee Marsh and northwest Ohio, a lot of people know about birds, but there's a lot out there that are just beginning, you know, so, yeah, we've offered a beginning bird class for, the last 5 or 6 years. It's been pretty popular. People come in, and we have regular classroom sessions, and then we get out into the field on the weekends, and my motto to them is that there's no substitution for time in the field. So, you know, I can tell them things and show them books, but the more they get out there, the better it's going to be and the more they're going to enjoy it.
Okay, yeah, that's for sure. There's nothing worse than a perfectly sunny spring day, about 70 degrees, and you're sitting inside learning about something. You'd much rather be out there.
Yeah.
Well, other than getting out in the field, as you said, what other kind of tips do you have for beginning bird watchers?
We talk a lot about field marks and spend a lot of time going over different field marks and how to recognize those, and those can be helpful when you're learning to identify a bird. We also talk quite a bit about bird songs, because if you think about it, you usually hear the bird first and then you try to find it. So if you can begin to recognize some of the bird songs, it's really a useful tool to have when you're out in the field.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fun. I was lying in bed this morning and my son came in. He's younger, so when he wakes up, he comes in and wakes me up. He does me the favor of waking me up early, too. But of course, this time of year, you hear a lot of the birds singing, and then he was one who brought it up. So I didn't want to keep forcing the birds on, but he was one who brought it up and said, "Dad, you hear all those birds?" And so I took that as a cue to tell him what all the different birds were and to pick out the different ones to listen to.
Well, good for him. Kids are so observant, you know. Mm-hmm. I tell you, they really are. And the birds are really singing. I mean, you really notice, you know, all winter it's kind of quiet, and then one day you go out and it's like, whoa,
yeah,
a symphony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their favorite is the mockingbird. We hear them. Yeah, we hear them quite frequently, and I always stop them and ask them what kind of bird it is. And if they can't figure it out, I'm like, well, what do you notice about it? Is it the same thing? Is he singing the same thing, or is he different things? And then as soon as I say that, they roll their eyes and say, all right, Dad, it's another mockingbird. So it's
fun. They'll know that one. That's a fun one to learn, because it's one bird that could sound like 30 different birds. So.
Yeah, yeah, they're fun. I remember the first time I heard a brown thrasher, I was probably even more impressed with the brown thrasher than I was with the mockingbird.
Yes, another mimic bird that makes a lot of different sounds.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have too many mockingbirds around this part of Ohio. Brown thrasher is fairly common, but mockingbird's always a treat.
Yeah, they are. Okay, now you're also the president of Firelands Audubon.
And, I am.
And you started a kids' nature club. Tell us about that.
Yes, I'm the president of Firelands Audubon. That covers Erie and Huron counties here in Ohio. And we have a lot of activities, nature programs and things for adults and things. But we wanted to, you know, encourage the kids to get involved. So we started a kids nature club. This is our fifth or sixth year for it. We're only able to meet once a month. I wish it was more, but, you know, we're all volunteers doing that. So, but we've had so much fun with it. The kids that come, they really want to be there, and we just do a variety of things. We do get outside every time. We may be inside, but I always say, no matter what the weather, guys, we're going to be outside, so dress for the weather. So it's been real rewarding to get those kids excited about nature.
Okay. Why do you think it was important to form that club and to get kids out there?
Well, I don't think today's kids have an opportunity to get outside, you know, as much as we would like to see them outside. Many of them, you know, come home to TVs or computers or whatever, and there's just no connection with the land and with nature and the real world, you know. They're in a virtual world a lot of times.
Yeah,
so
they are.
With the nature end of it. So we would just want to give them opportunities to get out and explore and be aware of what's out there and learn a little bit about nature and appreciate it.
Okay. Now, just like I asked you about some beginning birding tips, what are some tips you have for people who may have kids or grandkids or, you know, neighbors that they want to get out there?
Sure. There's a lot of reasons, I guess, why kids and families and adults even, you know, don't get outside. They're maybe fearful of what's out there, or they don't know anything about nature, or, you know, they don't know where to go. So, you know, I say, you don't have to have a, you know, structured programs are nice. You know, they do a lot of those at parks and places. You can join one of those. But just taking a simple walk in, you know, in the woods or on a trail or by a lake or just being outside, you know, the kids seem to discover things on their own, you know. They're happy with sticks and stones and
yeah.
dirt, you know.
Yeah.
They're happy.
Yeah, my kids like to catch.
It doesn't take a lot.
Yeah. My kids turn over rocks and find, if there's a salamander, great, but if it's just an earthworm, then they're happy with that. And I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I used to dread seeing some of the insects under there, especially, you know, the ones with lots of legs. So,
yes, yes.
But, you know, but thankfully my kids turn it over, and if they see several legged insect running away, they'll kind of grab it and let it crawl on them, and then they'll set it back on the ground. So they apparently don't have the same fear I do, which is good.
Yeah, it's good. You know, the more they're out there and exposed to it, and, you know, anything that moves, kids will love. And
yeah.
I have 8 grandkids, and they're all outside with me as often as I can get them outside, and we go camping, and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Where do you like to go camping?
Oh, well, I could go anywhere camping if I have my tent, but... Oh, we've taken them to different places. You know, when my kids were growing up, we took a lot of camping vacations. You know, we went to the Smoky Mountains, and we went up into the UP of Michigan, beautiful country up there, and Mackinac Island. But, you know, we usually stick to, like, the state parks or the more natural areas rather than the touristy areas.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun. The more secluded the spot, the better.
Exactly.
Yep, yeah.
Yep. I don't prefer a campsite that packs them in there. You know, some of them are a little too close.
So yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You want to have a little space when you're camping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when the sun goes down, it's nice and quiet, and then with a crowded campground, so you can hear what's going on, all what everyone's talking
exactly.
about.
It's like, oh, and then some of these campers just crack me up that have to bring everything
yeah.
under the sun with them when they're camping, you know. It's
mm-hmm.
like, wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah, you're supposed to leave that
to me,
at home.
That's not my idea of camping, so.
Yeah. So in the UP, I have to ask this because I'm a nut for moose. Did you see moose up there while you were up in northern part of Michigan?
I did not see moose up there. I have seen moose before. Once when I was actually working for Campfire Boys and Girls, I took a group backpacking out to Grand Tetons in Yellowstone area, and we were backpacking, and I was the last one in line, and we were being pursued by moose. I mean,
oh, no.
They weren't aggressive or anything, but
yeah.
boy, those are one tall animal, so
yeah.
long legs. So.
Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah, I've seen moose on occasion.
mm-hmm. Yeah, I go up to northern New Hampshire in May. I guess, you know, anywhere up in northern New England, and I bring my kids up there, and we go looking for moose, and it's fun.
Yeah.
I had Kim Kaufman, who's also from Ohio, was a guest on Bird Calls, and she was wondering whether this whole moose thing was just a big myth or not.
Yeah, she's always looking for a moose.
Yeah. So you, I guess in 2011, you received the Firelands Audubon, the highest reward, the Great Blue Conservation Award. Tell us a little bit about that.
I did. We have an award, conservation awards that we give away each year. We give one away to an organization in the community that's helped with conservation, and then we give one to a member that's been a member for a while and you know, been involved in the organization. And, yeah, this past year I was privileged to receive the Great Blue Award. It was quite an honor.
Okay, good. And also... another award, the Master Frontline Interpreter Award. What exactly does that mean?
No, how did you know about that? Did I tell you about that?
I work for a newspaper. I know lots of stuff.
You know how to research and find out what's happening. Yes, that was from NAI, which is the National Association of Interpretation. It's a professional organization for naturalist type people. In fact, next week I'm going to be at the regional workshop all week. I've been on the planning committee, and we have some people, about 150 people coming to that. But, yeah, I won the Master Frontline Interpreters Award quite a few years ago. But my job here as a naturalist, I'm the only naturalist. I have a seasonal person that I can hire to get through the busy time, but many park systems, you know, they're lucky enough to have a whole staff naturalist or an interpretive staff, but me, it's pretty much me here, so yeah, I guess I'm on the front line.
Okay, good. I guess we got time for one more question here, and it kind of goes along with the awards you won and the fact that you got into what you love a little later in life. So it must be rewarding to get these awards, knowing that, you know, if you didn't follow your dreams, then you never would have had the possibility to get these things.
Yeah, the awards are nice. You know, it's always nice to be recognized by your peers and you know, people you're serving. I guess the greatest rewards of the job, though, are kind of, you know, intangible things. When I see kids getting excited about nature or seeing a bird for the first time when they finally get their binoculars adjusted right, and
yeah,
you know, that's all the reward I need.
Okay. All right. Well, it's great having you on the show, Mary. Thank you very much. And best of luck this spring finding all your warblers.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I know you've got some more talented people from Ohio coming up on your show, Jen Brumfield, I think, and Julie Zickafoos, and they're really two talented ladies, so I'm sure your listeners will enjoy those, and thanks again, and come to McGee Marsh.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mary, and again, that was Mary Warren, naturalist at McGee Marsh Wildlife Area, and that'll do it for this birthday edition of Bird Calls Radio. We'll see you next week on 1490 WGCH.